dance all the time. This is the Dan Time Podcast with your host, Dan McArthur.
Hey, folks, welcome to a brand new episode here of the Dan Time Podcast. It is 2026, and Dan Time has, as you can see, it's not gone away. I haven't been run off by the big major podcast entities and figured out, okay, this is just a big pond. I need to get out of it. I'm still here. Really excited. We've been trying to do this for some time. Maybe this time last year, my guest today and I were trying to reconnect. And I got to tell you, this is super exciting for me. I've actually got a little bit of the nerves going again because this is one of my favorite guests. He needs no introduction. I'll paint some color as we go along here to remind you who he is. But first appeared on episode number 8, October 2023. Then a follow-up holiday episode on Christmas Eve 2023, episode 21. Here we are, number 106. And Mr. Dan Kabelka is back. How are you today, Dan?
Fine. I bring you greetings from the great green north.
Yes, sir.
We don't have a whole lot of snow right now. But that's okay. And I don't know if you can see in the background the crutches.
Yes.
I'm coming to you from the disabled list as well.
I heard about this. So about a month ago, before Christmas, you tore your Achilles, I understand.
Well, you know the saying, no good deed goes unpunished? Well, my friend and I were delivering sandwiches and bag lunches to folks who live in the motels, the drug houses, and the encampments. And at the one motel, they didn't clean out their parking lot, and his car got stuck. So I, being a fool, got out and tried to push his car, and I tore my Achilles tendon right across. And just as a bit of advice to people who tear their Achilles tendons, it didn't hurt that much. Like, my foot was flat. It didn't hurt. Heel was down. Didn't hurt. I got up on the toes. And I just feel like somebody kicked me in the calf. So, and another bit of advice is, I've been doing research on torn Achilles tendons, and there's a real spike right now. And all the doctors said it's due to the same thing, which is pickleball.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. All these old guys like us think we can go out and play pickleball. So they're seeing a lot of those too. So anyway, I'll be in the boot for about 3 months and then probably another 3 to 6 months of rehab after that. So.
Well, Dan, when something like this unexpected happens with you after the well-documented things that you've been through, how do you handle a setback like this?
What, remember my motto, Dan? Make it work.
Make it work. Yeah.
And you know, it's a series of problems come up. You just have to solve them one at a time. The hardest part for me is going to be mental, because I can't get out and do those things I enjoy doing.
Right.
And so this is going to kind of drive me nuts, just not being able to be active. But we'll get by. We'll get by.
Now, and Dan, we're coming up on registration here. If anybody listening is in the Chatham-Kent area, just so happens to be, and you've got family members, friends between the ages of 8 and 18, mm-hmm. Special needs, looking for a fun new activity. You mentioned to me that you're launching the Challenger Soccer Program. Is this the first mm-hmm. season?
This is our first season. I told the soccer folks I would do it on one condition, that we played indoors. I've had a lot of nervous breakdowns over weather. And they were quite open to it. One of the things I find gratifying that I push is, rather than create our own organization, we've gone to different sports organizations and said, we want you to incorporate these folks into your organization. We want you to expand your mandate to include folks with special needs. I'm not a soccer coach. So I set it up and I said, you guys supply the coaches. I'll show you how to set it up. And originally we thought we'd have to buy a portable field. I don't know if you've seen them. They're inflatable fields. And wouldn't you know it, about 2 months ago, somebody put up a new indoor sports facility here in Chatham. I'm going to give them a plug because they deserve it. They're called the Flex Plex. And it's like a big warehouse, but they have like 6 volleyball courts, 2 indoor soccer facilities, beach volleyball, the whole thing. And we went to them and said, this is perfect for us, 5-on-5 size field. And the guy says, I want to do this because our organization, or our business, and it is a business, We want to make sure everybody is open to everyone, that we're inclusive. And that's why I don't mind giving them a plug. And here we have a business that's saying, we're going to expand our mandate to include folks with special needs.
That's wonderful.
And that's really something I didn't count on. We started the baseball, but something has happened. I think is very important. I know we have a couple of churches around here who have set up programs for folks with special needs. So even the churches are saying we have to expand our mandate to deal with folks with special needs. And that to me is really, really important.
Dan, maybe something I didn't ask you on the previous episodes, the Challenger baseball players that you've been involved with over the years and over the decades, really.
Yeah.
Have you had a chance, I'm sure you have, to watch some of them grow and some of these kids that maybe had the same inside joke that they can come back to you with from 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and you still laugh and do a special handshake or something?
Well, about 5 years ago, we were playing indoors, and this was Lisa's first game ever. And her first at bat, and we used the big rubber balls indoors, and she lined one up the middle and took it right square off my beak. It has made her summer. And every time I see her now, she talks about how she hit the coach in the nose. So at the end of the year, we created an award called the Please Don't Kill the Coach Award. So every year, the person who lines it up the middle the most, it gets the award for trying to kill the coach. And it's just, you know what, Dan, it brings a little bit of humanity to it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're more than just ball players. And to me, they're like, and I may have mentioned this, they're like kids I didn't get to have.
Right.
And some of your viewers would know that because of genetics, I had a bad heart. And it was a wise but regrettable decision not to have children of my own because I was afraid of passing along the genes, so I didn't get to have kids. And I liken it to the Field of Dreams movie, but in reverse. He made a field so he could play catch with his dad. I created a program so I could play catch with my kids I didn't get to have. And whenever I see them out on the street, always hi, Coach Dan, is Coach Dan. And after I retired, I said, you can call me Dan now. Not going to work. It's Coach Dan.
Always Coach Dan.
Always Coach Dan. And their friends who don't play baseball see me as Coach Dan. So, yeah, it's a nice little addition to my life, if you will. It's just as I've added to theirs. And the other thing I wanted to mention, my first heart donor was 19 when he died.
That was Lee.
And he didn't get to have a legacy. You know, when you were 19, Dan McCardle, what do we know him for?
Right.
So the first time I visited his mother, and I said, you know, Lee didn't get to have a legacy, but he has my legacy now. And all those things I do are part of Lee's, directly part of Lee's legacy. And that's kind of how I look at it. And it made this losing her son a lot more tolerable, if that's possible, you know, for my donor mom. So, and in case I haven't caught up to you since my last testing procedures, the doctor looked at my test results and said, we don't know what's going to kill you, Dan, but it won't be your heart. And for those who don't listen or haven't listened, I've had two heart transplants. So I don't want to assume everybody knows that.
Yeah, folks, if you haven't heard, episode 8 is where we're really going into some detail, and then some more episode 21. But yeah, Dan had his first heart transplant 1989, and then a second in 2000. Is that right?
Yeah.
And I wrote this down. I think this was after the brain tumor.
Yeah, that's right. Where, no, before the brain tumor was in 2020.
Okay. And maybe that's where the doctors or somebody gave you or had the remark of, you're a cockroach, Dan. We just can't kill you. We can't get rid of you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, when my first heart checkup after my brain tumor, my recipient coordinator says, we just can't get rid of you. You're like a cockroach. And then when you and the nuclear war happens, it's you and the cockroaches to repopulate the earth. And people have different sayings or pictures that kind of denote their journey through the transplant process. And I thought, what a better for my life than a cockroach? Because no matter what happens, I just keep coming back. I told someone when I ruptured my Achilles tendon, God gave me a superpower, and that superpower was healing.
Yeah.
I seemed to heal real well. So I have confidence that we'll get through this thing with my leg. You know, we'll get back to where we want to be.
Well, the torn Achilles aside, Dan, I wanted to comment from the moment that we logged on and we've now seen each other for the first time in, has it really been 2 years? Is that something almost like that? Yeah. You look great. You really
Thank
do.
You
look happy. You look healthy.
There's a reason for that. I have a girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, that'll do it.
I am in a committed monogamous relationship for about a year and a half now. And she lives directly below me in my apartment building. And for Christmas last year, I got a broomstick with a note on it that said, knock 3 times on the ceiling if you want me. No, and but because Brenda lives one floor below me, we see no point in actually moving in together. And wow. I've been by myself for 20 years. That would be a big adjustment. And she's been by herself for over 30. So that's been too much of an adjustment. So we're very happy.
Dan, that's a perfect arrangement there.
Oh, yeah. Whenever somebody says, why aren't you getting married? We say, why?
Just live in the same complex, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She's, like I said, she's just one floor directly below me. So now the only problem with the Achilles, I live on the second floor, and we don't have an elevator. But the problem is the laundry, things like laundry. Trying to get my laundry down 2 flights of stairs and back up.
Yeah.
But like I said earlier, you take one problem at a time. And how are we going to make this work? How do we fix this? And the truth is, there's no shortage of parents from the adult challenger or baseball program that are willing to come over and help me out with stuff and give me rides if I need it. So the good news, if there is any, is I hurt my left leg, so I can still drive. Getting out to the car from the apartment building is the problem. Because I'll be on crutches now for probably another couple months. And it's kind of nice with our socialized medicine up here. My physiotherapy is free. So it's on OHIP, so I can get all the physio I want. So that's a worry I don't have.
Yeah, we talked about that maybe on the first episode that if you go back to 1989, and let's just say you live in Detroit.
Yes.
We're not talking today. Like, well, this isn't happening.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. And back in 89, I don't know if I mentioned it, they're still considered experimental, the heart transplants. And everybody in the operating room that night was paid except me and the doctor, the surgeon, because he didn't get paid for doing the heart transplant because it was still experimental. But what that showed me was his goal was to keep me alive, and he didn't care about the money. And that loyalty is something that I really count on and I need. And all of your listeners who have had organ transplants, they will tell you communication with your team is incredibly important. Like it's really key. And I've got a good team. And if they don't respond, I just talk a little louder. Well, I didn't get this far by taking it easy.
Dan, before we get too far along, I do want to call out a photo that you shared with me. And you said, hey, let's merge this into the conversation today. What is going on here with this? It looks like a potted plant of some sort that's been furnished into a decorated tree.
We were delivering sandwiches out to one of the encampments, and it's winter and there's snow. And I look in the middle of this encampment and there's this tree that looks like it does not belong there. It was Charlie Brown's Christmas tree.
Oh man.
As soon as I saw it, I went, Charlie Brown's. And Dan, for these folks, tomorrow is the same as today. And then tomorrow after that, like they don't see themselves as having a future. And every day is pretty much the same. But you know what? They took time to stop and celebrate Christmas. And to me, that showed me these folks who live in the encampments or the motels or the drug houses or whatever, they still got a little bit of humanity left.
Yeah.
And when we're dealing with them, that's something that we really try to latch on to, is that humanity they have left. And I'm sure you've seen videos on YouTube of folks who will actually videotape folks are on fentanyl or whatever, and they show them, and they kind of look like zombies walking around, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But they still have that humanity.
Right.
And there's one young fellow here, and he's known for he covers himself with a blanket. And that's what he is. And they got to calling him Blanket Boy or Blanket. And one day I said, no, stop. His name is Jacob. Hmm. Calling him blanket boy or saying someone has a drug problem or mental health, it dehumanizes them. And how can I connect with those people if I can't connect with them on a human level? And that's really important. Like, I'm sure where you are, I don't know where you are exactly right now. You have problems with folks who are homeless.
Oh, yeah.
And where are you at now, Dan?
Outside of Pensacola. In fact, the church that we go to is downtown Pensacola. And there's a steady stream of homeless that come in, and we'll serve them coffee.
Sure.
Some of them will stay for the service, but some will just file out. But at the same time, we have...
you know what? They're there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had a young fellow who was sitting outside our church. So we had him in, and it took us a couple months to get him to come into the sanctuary for the service. But, you know, eventually it worked out. Our problem with the homeless, and this is kind of where my heart is right now, it did not start in this generation. And it's not going to end in this generation. And I don't know what the answer is, to be honest with you. Right now, of the people I deal with, either they have drug problems, or they have mental health problems, or they just can't afford an apartment. I looked at some statistics. Before COVID, a one-bedroom apartment in Chatham was $600 a month. After COVID, it's $1,200 a month.
Yeah.
Where do these people go?
Dan, I feel like you're saying, maybe their problems get so compounded that, it's very easy for someone in the working world that's got a family and they've got a bunch of problems that thinks, and you think, wow, I'm never going to get out from under this, but you have to find ways to do it. So you do. But if you're on the streets and you're that far down, you're that far removed from day-to-day modern or civilized, however you want to call it, you can kind of visualize where some guys just say, well, I'll just stay here.
Or my goal tomorrow is, where's my drugs going to come from?
Yeah.
That's the goal. And that's a big problem. I don't know about, where you live, but where I live, you can't force people into rehab.
Yeah.
COVID really, really made that problem here a lot worse. And we're not the only ones. I understand that. But at least our city is looking at some long-term solutions. And I don't know what they are. But at least we're looking at it, long-term solutions. And unfortunately, what I found was people didn't get upset until a homeless person was sitting in front of their business.
Right.
Okay. So somebody did a documentary on that. And I talked to the documentarians, and I said, I'm not worried about the people in front of your business because I can see them. It's the ones I can't see, the ones out in the bush. And the ones who live in the bush, a lot of them have warrants out on them. And you can't, they're not coming out for a free meal. And the problem, like I say, just builds and builds and builds. And they get used to living like that. I'm not going to lie or sugarcoat it. Most of the women are trafficked. I can't do anything about that either. We protect them as best we can, but that's the hard truth of it too. And a while back, I sent you a link about maybe having my friend Simon on. He chose not to, but Simon was on a 4-year scholarship at University of Indiana, by the way, football scholarship.
Wow.
And he was playing in a game, I think against Washington, and everybody's cheering for him. And one of his buddies says, do you know what, Simon? Everybody in that audience right now wants to be us. And he said, right now, and this guy's been on the street, he said, nobody wants to be me right now. And that really struck me. We had a young lady in the, hang on, I just got to clear my throat.
Oh, yeah.
Who passed away with a drug overdose. And we're at a community dinner, and they asked me to say a few words. And I'm writing it up, and I realize this might be the only eulogy she gets. And it was, I still have a conscience. And sometimes when you're dealing with people there, you just want to say, it's too big for me. It's too big for me. But we plug along. Certainly, when we take the lunches out, we do it on behalf of our church. The church ladies make the sandwiches, and we take them out, and we offer prayer if they want it. If they don't, that's fine. And we offer Bibles if they want it. Fine. If they don't, fine. But what we found is they know we're coming at 1 o'clock on Thursday afternoon. They have something to look forward to.
That's it.
You know what I mean? And what they lack is hope. When you're hopeless, you will live at just an existence kind of level. And I don't know if you're familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but they're near the bottom. So we, like I said, we do the best we can, and we hope. I was telling my friend, I look at what we do as an act of worship, because we're there to represent God.
Well, you hear people, especially now, I mean, it's been going on for a long time, but kind of morph religion into maybe their own bubble and their own people. I mean, everyone is, I don't know if everyone's been in and out of some of these churches where it's just kind of like that message pertains to us, our our level of affluence. But, and we're aware of the people on the margins, but we don't go out there.
Well, I will tell you, one of the reasons it got so bad, 5 years ago, nobody could see them. And once they could see them, and now it's a problem. And I don't want to go into politics, but just a general statement of mine. Some people's faith determines their politics. And some people's politics determines their faith.
Very true.
And that's my observation. And that's just my observation. People can take it however they want.
Well, we should all take your spirit and your interest in your fellow man, no matter what their status is in life, we should all take a page out of that book. I can tell just talking to you and hearing you describe these stories, how important that is to you and your mission here on this earth.
Yeah. I also realized, Dan, one slip on the ice again, I hit my head. I'm living in the tent. And we had our first years of the baseball program with the children. These two kids were on their bikes outside the fence laughing at them. And I said, "You like those bikes, boys?" And they said, "Yeah." I said, "One slip on that bike and you're on the other side of the fence." And then I said, "I want you to come in the fence and meet them, meet the players. That's the important thing." And whenever we get attention for the baseball, I want to come out and watch. I tell a reporter, "Bring your glove, wear your running shoes, sit on the bench." And a couple of years ago, the Blue Jays sent a team down, Toronto Blue Jays. And they said, "We're going to do some activities." And I said, "Bring your gloves, bring your shoes, sit on the bench. This is not about baseball. It's about the people. It's about the players." And they got more insight into the program by doing that than by running some skills. Besides, my players don't go out there to run skills. They go out there to play baseball. So they weren't real happy with that idea either. So anyway, you want to talk about fantasy football?
Yes. And I do want to put a plug in. And you mentioned the Blue Jays. It was kind of hard for me to pull for the Dodgers. I am a National League guy, being a Cub fan, but man, I had to root for the Jays in that series. That was tough. But at the same time, I feel like they've got the firepower, or whatever you call it, to be right back there next year.
They asked John Schneider about the team. He says, "We got a bunch of ball players."
Man, they do.
You know what I mean? They're not superstar, whatever. They're just good, solid ball players. Go ahead.
It was refreshing, Dan, to see a little bit of small ball being played in the World Series. Yes. A little bit of getting outside of that analytical groupthink that all the teams seem to have. We preach the same strategy and same in-game situations. You know, you're never going to see the hit and run. And then, all of a sudden, you saw Schneider doing some things, not left and right, not constantly, but just here and there, a little slap single when Vladdy could have tried to power it over the fence.
Yeah. Well, I got up to see the Toronto play the Tigers up at Rogers Center. And anyway, it's bottom of the eight. Tigers are up by one. Alejandro Kirk is up to bat. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, he was a joy to watch.
And it's 3-2, and I'm screaming from the stands, "Walk him. Walk him. They pitch to him. And nobody can turn a double into a single like Alejandro Kirk.
And you don't think that guy is going to make it around the bases.
Oh, yeah, like you said, he hits it off the wall. It's a single. He had a triple once, and I thought they're going to have to call up the cat. But, you know, he's somebody you can really root for.
Yeah.
You know, you can cheer for this guy. And you may not remember this. It was a hockey game. Toronto's playing Carolina. And Carolina's two goalies got hurt. So the Zamboni driver went in net for Carolina. And it was like every beer league goalie said, I can play in that league. And this guy showed him they could. And he was a big hero, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And we're all of us who aren't real Leaf fans are going, come on, it's a beer league goalie. The one game in the World Series, I went to bed at 11 o'clock and I woke up at 3 in the morning. I thought, I better check what the final score was. Yeah. They were still playing.
That's right. That's right. I think that was 15, 16, 17 innings. The same thing. I had to go to bed about the 13th.
Yeah. Every game was a good game. Yaskevich, the pitcher, came out of that. For Toronto, they didn't know he'd be that good. He was great. Yamamoto, the pitcher for the Dodgers. I understand he's a curved spine now from carrying the rest of the team on his back, but that's another story. No, it was the Jays lost. It was disappointing, but it was a great series. It was good for baseball, too. You know, every game was close. A lot of good characters, a lot of excitement.
And, at the outset of the playoffs, you've got your Tigers in there, too. So, isn't that right? The Tigers and the Jays were in the bracket at the outset. So, what are you thinking if there's a possible Detroit-Toronto matchup?
Well, all I can say is this. Tarek Skubal wants $32 million a year, and they're only offering him $19. That should answer your question. They're not talented a team, but they played well, and they come through in the clutch.
Really fast, I do want to comment on the NFL playoffs, which commence this afternoon as we're talking. I think we've got, is that Steelers, and is that today?
No, we got the Rams in Carolina this afternoon.
I love making predictions. I'm just going to go out on a limb here, and I think the Panthers, I filled out a bracket today. I've got them advancing a couple rounds. I think they catch lightning in a bottle. Same with the 49ers, and I also like Houston on the AFC side. But you have any teams? I know your Lions are out.
They had some injuries on the interior of the offensive line, which was their strength. And that I have a feeling if they don't do anything stupid, like first and goal at the 1 yard line, they throw a pass instead of running it. Seattle.
Yeah.
Another thing, they've got Pete Carroll or anything really dumb like that. Seattle's a solid team, and I watched them playing San Francisco that one night. And they're not spectacular, but they're really solid. So. And to me, in the playoffs, to experience me something, so the Bills are going to do better, I think. But it all comes down to Josh Allen.
Yeah.
And I had him in fantasy football, and 1 week he gets 6 touchdowns, the next week, not so much. I drafted a couple guys, like in every league, that let me down, to be honest with you. Saquon Barkley with 1, and Justin Jefferson. Can I rant?
Go ahead.
All right. In Yahoo private leagues, the commissioner has the ability to change people's lineups after the game starts. And 2 of my leagues, the league commissioner was changing his lineup and mine according to how people did. And I wrote Yahoo and said, that's not fair. And so I think I'm going to have to abandon Yahoo and go to another platform. Like, it was really disappointing that happened. And they took away, I don't know if you noticed, they took away the message boards too.
They did. I'm very upset about that. Dan, this is a whole different topic, but I like some of the memes and the text messages that people send, funny memes and stuff, but I do kind of miss the old dialogue and just, I miss those days.
My first year of playing, there was 10 of us didn't know each other, strangers. And that year we had 2,000 posts. Not one obscenity, not one putting the other guy down. Everything was really respectful, and it was a joy. Now, here's the rule about message boards. Never post when you're drunk, stoned, or angry. And just remember, somewhere down the road, you're going to regret that you put on there. Yeah, you know.
Because it's forever.
Well, once it's on the internet, I did a little talk at our city council, actually, about the Challenger baseball. And they wanted to see the speech first. And they had me cut out a couple of words that they're offensive words. I wanted to say them to make a point, but they said, don't even say them.
Yeah.
And so, someone called one of our players a name. Actually, I think it was her grandmother. And I just said, oh, here, she's not that. Hmm. She's not that. And I wanted to use that word for the effect. And that word, for years and years, people didn't use it. And now it's starting to come back. And it bothers me. Because to me, that indicates as a species, we're kind of going backwards.
I think we have a real empathy problem.
Yes. Well, I listen to different podcasts on YouTube. And some of the Christian podcasts, they think of empathy as a bad thing. And I'm not buying that, because empathy is a core of what Jesus was.
Right.
And I didn't want to get into the whole religious thing, but this was the core of what Jesus was. It was empathy and sympathy.
I wish that was just a set value with particularly every parent. Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing with my kids, I try to be as conversational as possible with them, really try to regulate their screen time, really for the most part. They don't have anything handheld right now. I just don't, for me, I'm not into that with the tablets. Now, my 8-year-old has a school laptop that he uses.
Yeah.
But I want the majority of their time to be spent hands-free, either outside and able and willing to engage in conversation and thought and discussion and that sort of thing. Because I think if you shove the technology, if you make that the focal point of your little children's lives at a very early age, they're not going to have the same experiences that we had for basically the first 20 or in some cases 40 years of your life before you had the ability to express yourself on a device.
The other thing too, your children and I were blessed and they had good fathers. Okay. A lot of those kids today are getting their parents are what they see on the internet.
Yeah.
And for a young man, for a role model example of what a man should be like, it's not healthy. Some of it is just not healthy. But there was an opening because fathers kind of abdicated their responsibility there. Or maybe they just didn't have it. But I had a father who was a good role model. And just from talking to you, I'm guessing that you did as well.
I did.
And that really helps. And words that were degrading or degenerating just were not allowed, especially racial stuff. We're just not allowed.
Mm-hmm.
And I may have mentioned this on the last podcast. We're all the same race. God only made one race. And I assure you, in my background, there's probably an African or a Jew, whatever. I'm from Eastern Europe, so it's very likely. And I'm no better than anybody else. And I was in church once and I was grousing about the music and somebody said, Dan, it's not about you. And that really stuck with me. It's not, the world is not about me. And especially in church, you kind of want to have your way and you got to realize you're there for everyone. And I'll give you an example. My church lost 150 people over COVID. Hmm. That's almost half. But the church is refilled, but a lot of the people that come into our church now are unchurched people.
Really?
And we love them. And our pastor did a message last week on grace. And for most Christians, that's a pretty basic concept. But he realized for the newer people that come in who are unchurched, this, and so he's talking to them and not those of us who know what it is. And I commend him for that because he realizes his first priority has to be the sheep, the lambs, as they say. And we were all really impressed that he would do that and go right back to the basics and talk about grace. And it's also nice to come to church and they keep it at, we don't hear about politics in my church. And that's really, because that's not what I go for, you know. And that's just my personal thing.
Yeah, I obviously think it should be left out of church. I don't know how it was 30 years ago or when our parents went to church that they talked about you know, if they talked about what Jimmy Carter was doing or what Kennedy was doing, yeah. if that was discussed in church or not from the pulpit.
Yeah.
Well, here in America.
Some of the stuff Kennedy did wasn't fit to be, no, I'm not going to say it. Yeah. But that's not what I go to church for. Yeah, if our pastor ever tried to get politics, but we have to understand the difference in Canadian and American politics. Our conservative are just a little bit to the right of center.
Yeah.
And our liberals are a little bit to the left of center, and they're a lot closer in outlook and philosophy. It's not a hate, got to run the other guy down as much as you can thing.
They're not way opposite ends, and there's no magnetic way we can meet in the middle.
Yes. Yes.
That's really what's happened here in the States.
Well, it's kind of creeping up here too. But we just have to be careful. Remember, and I told someone the other day, I vote for people. I vote for policy. I do not vote for adjectives.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
You're conservative, you have to vote for so-and-so. Or you're liberal, you have to vote for so-and-so. No. Policies are only liberal or conservative because that's the label we put on them.
Right. If you notice, my wife and I, we obviously have a lot of the same shared values, uh-huh. but on political issues, she can be all in for something and I'm all out.
Uh-huh.
But what she supports is not really under the standard umbrella of what it might have been a generation ago. So it's like uh-huh. there's people that consider themselves conservative, but they want pot legalized, which you would have never heard of that.
Oh, no.
20 years ago, or they think that physician-assisted suicide, you know, which I don't want to get into that, but like there could be somebody who's on the right wing of things, or there could be someone on the left wing that's opposed to nation-building exercises in other countries. Usually infrastructure and repairing roads and bridges is pulls us all together. It affects our drive to work.
There was a speaker on assisted suicide. It's called MAID. And they said, you get it. They'll consider you if you have a fatal disease. I said, that's called life. Life is a fatal disease.
Yeah. I
mean, let's be honest.
Nobody's getting out of here alive.
No. So you know what? You make it the best you can. And I will tell you, it's a personal thing. I have a nephew who's in the hospital right now. And he's on a ventilator. He's has heart issues. And he lived a life that was not conducive to having a healthy heart. But that way. And he thought it would never happen. And this couple of days ago, he came close to the edge and he had to look over the edge. And I hope he realizes that once you fall, there's no getting up.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do things to get yourself closer to that edge faster than other things. And so if your listeners pray, his name is Jacob. And I would, we certainly appreciate the prayer. I say we savor prayers. Uncle Dan's trying to keep his nose out of it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the way it is right now, I think the fewer people that go up to see him in the hospital or whatever, the better. But I'm just hoping and praying that Jacob has now he's looked over the edge and said, I don't like this. I don't want this. Now, I'm going to switch topics because I saw a picture and it's going to make you laugh. In Wisconsin, a raccoon got into the liquor store. I don't know if you saw this picture. You see the picture?
My wife told me about this, but I haven't seen the picture.
And he got into the liquor store, and there he is passed out between the toilet and the garbage can in the bathroom. And they want to make him the state animal of Wisconsin. And I thought that's just the funniest thing I'd ever seen.
Because when he jumped down, I guess he knocked over a display in it.
Well, I think he had a little bit to drink, too. That's why he passed out at the toilet.
Oh, man.
I had a youth. We all did.
So, oh, yeah. I was talking to my wife about that today. I mean, my wife has never been a drinker.
Yes.
Which was good for me because I definitely enjoyed a good bourbon and all that stuff in my younger years and really before I got married. So this was great to be, you know, to get into a relationship with someone who that's not something they really did regularly, which I it seemed like I chased that in the past. I'd always have a girlfriend that liked to have a glass of wine or several.
Yes.
But just kind of reflecting back, and today we were sitting on the sofa earlier, and I said, I got nothing for it. I remember how it felt. I remember becoming intoxicated, and yeah, you're having a nice time or whatever, but I said, it didn't do anything for me. I mean, maybe, you know, if you can think of something positive, were there some times on a bar stool with a ball game on that you're having a really lively conversation with somebody? Sure. But I can see the clarity in my day-to-day life that was not there in the past. The past was usually consumed with, okay, I got to get myself right today. I got a lot of things I got to accomplish. I wasn't thinking about that last night. And then it just seemed like day-to-day living was a little more daunting. And I got through it, and I didn't call into work. I didn't do stuff like that. I did the things I needed to do, but it wasn't, it was like you're putting these chains on that you have to.
Yeah. I was fortunate. My third year of university, a young lady came into my room, Dan, I want to talk to you. And she said, sit down. And she said, Dan, you're not an alcoholic yet. And I just kind of went, God sent me a guardian angel.
Yeah.
God, someone was concerned enough about me before it became a real problem.
Uh-huh.
To say, I'm worried about you. And that really helps. And I know there are people that aren't going to hear it when you say it, but somebody said that to me, and it really made a difference in my life because I realized I was going in a bad direction. And in late 70s, when you're in a university dorm and it's all guys, just a little wild.
Yeah.
It was funny. The second year was fun. When the first year it was fun. Second year, it's not fun anymore.
Yeah,
Dan. Go ahead.
I'm sure you remember some times where the party was so much fun, and you wake up and your head's pounding, but you can visualize the night before all the characters that were around, all the fun everyone was having. But now you're waking up, and they don't. I used to make this reference. Nobody gets to have that hangover for you.
Yes.
Nobody gets to tackle the day that's in front of you for you. And usually nobody's calling to say, hey, Dan, how you doing? Can I come by and bring you some breakfast? How can I help you? How can I be your friend? Usually, for the most part, those faces of the night, you know, might be good people in certain respects, but those really are not true friends. Like, they just really aren't. Not that they're bad people, but I went through a period like that where I thought, man, I got a lot of good people in my life. They're always ready to party.
Yeah.
But very, very few. If I just had to say, hey, listen, I need somebody to talk to you. You want to go get some coffee and just go sit down and talk? And that didn't happen too often. But if we're going to a bar, sure.
Mm-hmm. I have a thing with churches, people come and go. And if somebody leaves my church and they're not my friend anymore, they were never my friend.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. If all you've got is you go to the same church, you have to have more. It's like my donor mom. I said, you can be my donor mom for so long, but sooner or later, we have to be just family and not donor family. Because donor family is not big enough to carry a relationship. Or alcohol is not big enough to carry a relationship. And let me, what's it go? Someone once said to a lady and said to Winston Churchill, Mr. Churchill, you're drunk. And he says, that's true, madam, but you're ugly. And when I wake up tomorrow, I'm going to be sober. But sooner or later, and I've talked to the kids, and I tell them, any habit you don't start, you don't have to stop.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, stopping. Or as Mark Twain say, quitting smoking is easy. I've done it 1,000 times. And just from my work with the homeless, I run the same people to rehab. And they say it takes about 7 shots at rehab. So if you're out there and you're teetering on the edge with the booze or the drugs, rehab is not fun.
And
one of my ball players had a daughter who's 23. This chokes me up. Hang on. Someone put fentanyl in the cocaine. Beautiful, intelligent girl. And she did not make it. Her mother will never, ever be over that. Never. Just think about what you're doing to other people. And with my nephew in the hospital, I want to say, look what you're doing to everybody else in your life. Like I said, the guy said to me in church, it ain't about you.
Yeah.
Your life is not just about Dan McArdle. And I've seen your pictures with your wife and your kids, your great family. And I think I saw somebody getting baptized.
Yeah. That was me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw a picture of a pastor. Go ahead.
Yeah, folks listening, Dan and I were Facebook friends, which is great. You know, had a lot of guests on the show, and I really consider everybody that I've connected with on the Day and Time podcast to be a friend. I think part of our purpose here on life is to make friends and be available, to be friendly and seek those connections. And it's really special when I think when Dan and I connected the first time and then the follow-up episode, and we still email. Dan will see stuff in a ball game, and he'll say, hey, I was watching, because he knows I like the Ravens and our sports teams. And it's really great to keep the connection going. I'm going off track here, but Dan, I mentioned you, and I think it was Voyager or something, Shout Out Atlanta, perhaps. I had a opportunity to put my name out there and a story on the podcast that's published, and it said, what was your favorite guest, your favorite episode? And I mentioned Dan Kobelka. I said, that's it. Hard stop. But I don't know where I started there. You've gotten to see that side of my family and kind of what I choose to put out there.
Yeah.
Because usually if it's not going to be positive, I don't post it. I usually just share. Sure.
Well, you'll notice on my Facebook, I don't post political stuff.
Yeah. And trust me, I have plenty of thoughts, and especially right now, this week, some really troubling things happening and did happen. But
those who have a certain political view at this point, there's nothing you're going to say that's going to make a difference. And people have the exact opposite view, and there's nothing you can say that's going to make a difference. So why say it?
Yeah.
Why say it?
I would echo what you said there. We all, especially if you feel like you can articulate your point online and you want to jump in the comment section of a political post and just say, well, I got the perfect rebuttal. And you spend all 30 minutes or so typing something up and you feel good about it. And some people like it, maybe 50 people like it. But the only effective way is that if you do what I know you're out there doing, and it's just lived your life in those, you know, the shadows at times. Nobody's watching. There's no camera on you. Nobody's taking it's not a photo op, but you're having a heart-to-heart with a person at the ground level in the margins of life. Or you're talking to somebody or some, you know, that somebody has a different opinion than you on politics and you're out in your community. Have a conversation. But I would strongly advise people just don't spend the energy on the online.
Most of it's not true anyway. So really, what's the point?
I told my wife, Natalie, today I have to mention it. It's been dominating our news cycle, the shooting in Minnesota, Minneapolis.
Yes.
And I said, honey, what you're seeing on your news feed is different than what I'm seeing on mine.
Yes.
And she mentioned a couple things, and I said, that's not real. That's fake. That picture you saw, that was AI. And I said, I'm not trying to prove, I'm not trying to make you feel bad or whatever, but I said, good thing you have me to snuff some of that out. There's a lot of people that see that and take it as fact.
Oh, a friend of mine posted something, and in the bottom right of the picture, it says, nothing in this picture is real. And he posted it as real. What I asked for is discernment.
Yeah.
There are no shortage of urban legend snopes, things like that, that, you know, we can check these things out. And that, I guess that bothers me that people are posting things without checking it out. You know,
well,
and if you lean one way or the other politically, you're going to get sucked in.
Well, what happens too, versus say the internet in 2005 or 2010 is you might read something from a news source, and then you think, well, let me go out to Google and try to cross-reference this. People are not doing that now. They're not getting off of their platform. They're really just, they're getting all their news by scrolling through their chosen platform, and they're not thinking, oh, wow, that's a shocking story. Let me Google and find some corroborating story. People are not doing that.
Yes. Yeah.
I have a background in communications, and I've worked for a newspaper, so I'm always going to do that, but and you don't have to have that background to have that curiosity, but I think people just get...
Well, it only takes a few minutes to do your homework, in all honesty. Is it going to change their minds? I kind of doubt it, but at least they're showing some discernment. And the one fellow, I was kind of embarrassed for him that he printed something or said right on it, it's fake, and he printed it as truth, and I kind of felt sorry for him.
He didn't catch it.
I don't know if he wanted to, but that's another story. Like I said, I will say this about your president. The cake has been baked.
Yeah.
Those who like him or whatever, there's nothing anybody's going to say. Those who don't like him, there's nothing you can say. So why have the...
Well,
I'm not going to lose a friend over politics.
Yeah. Well, another thing I realized, if you're of a certain age, you're probably aware that in the States, if you voted for Joe Biden in 2020, or you voted for Harris in 24, or you voted for Trump, or you voted for going back to the Clinton and Bush and all that stuff, whoever you voted for, and you're all in, and you like this person, and you believe in the agenda, and then some unflattering news comes out, maybe it's one story, and you just kind of, you're like, no, that's not true, I don't believe that, that's just whatever. But when something really major comes along, and it casts your preferred candidate in a negative light, people have a hard time saying, oh, wow. Oh, he is lying. Oh,
yeah.
I'm being oh, really? Mm-hmm. They have a hard time doing that because now it reflects on them, and they cast that vote, and they have to reconcile that in their minds that, oh. And so they get close, I think, to that realization sometimes, and then they beat it back because in order to accept it, they have to accept the flawed.
I have friends who are into Christian apologetics, and they love to argue and debate. And he said, for all the arguments that you've had and debates that you won, has anybody ever come to the faith in Christ over you because you won a debate?
Yeah.
Doesn't happen. That's not, it's not about winning a debate. And I heard someone say, and I love this thing, when you start keeping score, you've lost.
Yeah.
When you start keeping score, and this is, you talk about marriages, but I think in life too, when you start keeping score, you've lost.
You've lost.
And there's a lot of truth to that.